This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Resistance Fighter, an educational program from Syngenta for growers invested in managing resistant weeds and protecting the future of their operation. Hey, it's a mixed start to the markets this week, but corn and soybeans are working to the upside with wheat and hogs under some light pressure, and cattle prices are fighting back from a lower open. Crude oil futures are higher, and the stock market has been on both sides of unchanged. And the way things stand right now, there's not much hope of ending the 16-day government shutdown.
From the studios of Farm Journal, this is AgriTalk. Today, we'll talk with Ann Dignan, Managing Director of J.P. Morgan Securities, and Machinery Pete to find out what's up in the world of iron. And coming up in just a few moments, Kirk Hins from BAMWX will update us on the weather. I'm AgriTalk News jockey Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, good morning. Thank you for joining us again this morning. Welcome to AgriTalk. Happy Monday morning, right? It's time to get another week of AgriTalk started, dude.
Let's get it rolling.
How's things going? How's the weekend?
Things are going great. Got a new puppy over the weekend.
I saw that.
My son has been wanting a puppy forever and ever and ever, and we finally found the right one.
Oh, I think the right one. That is a gorgeous yellow-colored, black-nosed,
yes,
pretty.
Yep,
little yellow lab.
She's gorgeous. Got her from a local farmer out here near my area. So we're pretty excited. It was a big weekend.
Cool.
Not a lot of sleeping went on. But
have you decided on a name yet, Davis?
No, we haven't. There have been three or four that just don't seem to stick, and I'm just going to call it Dog.
Dog.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow, I mean, I tell you.
If we start giving these dogs names, I mean, you know, next thing you know, one day a dog is president. We just can't have that. Not on my watch, mister.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Yeah, we had a good weekend as well. Unbelievable on the weather.
Yeah.
It was like 50 degrees on Saturday. It was spectacular.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Got a little chilly yesterday.
Yes. Yeah. But, well, and the wind blew a little hard,
and
it rained, and kind of ugly all the way around with the way that this weather's gone last little while. All right, let's get to it because we want to save some time for Kirk coming up here. Let's get to the news. What's going on?
Well, talks are in progress today on a couple important national issues. The first, U.S. and China trade talks are expected to yield results as officials from both countries meet today and tomorrow in Beijing. The other includes recent offers by the White House to resolve the government spending impasse as President Trump signaled a willingness to build a southern U.S. border wall out of steel instead of concrete and reiterated his threat to declare a national emergency if Congress doesn't approve the funds. Steel instead of concrete? What's the diff?
I have no idea.
How does that help that
they're making a deal out of this?
Yeah.
I mean, you and I talked about it last week. I was going off on some reporter that was at the White House press briefing that was saying, "No, that's not what you promised. You promised a wall out of concrete instead of steel. You never said anything about steel. Who cares?"
Yeah.
Well, literally, also, who cares?
Yeah. I don't. Apparently someone does.
Yeah.
According to Politico, House Agriculture Democrats are planning a wide-ranging series of hearings now that they're in the majority, and Farm Bill implementation, will be the top priority of each subcommittee.
Good.
And here's just a short list of oversight priorities, potential hearings circulated among members this week. SNAP waivers. The Nutrition Subcommittee plans to review the Trump administration's rule on making Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program work requirement waivers. The ERS and NIFA relocation. The panel that oversees ag research will dig into Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue's controversial plans to move the Economic Research Service and National Institute of Food and Agriculture outside the Beltway by the end of 2019. And finally, trade aid will come up. Several subcommittees are planning hearings on USDA's trade relief program for farmers and ranchers. Some lawmakers and commodity groups have criticized USDA's efforts as inadequate, and many have questioned the payment rates for specific ag products under the direct payment program. Some important issues there, Chip.
Yeah, no question about it. But it's good to hear that implementation of the intent of the Farm Bill is going through. And I appreciate the idea that they're going to tighten up on the ability to issue those waivers on SNAP. I mean,
yeah,
if you're able-bodied and the right age and mm-hmm. don't have the you should have to do something. That's all I'm saying.
Well, and last week's speculation, of course, continued that China would increase U.S. soybean purchases and also purchase a hefty amount of U.S. wheat. That would be great. Cash and basis levels signal some purchases were likely made, but with USDA daily export sales announcements no longer available, of course, confirmation is lacking. Right. Chip, National Security Advisor John Bolton said U.S. troops would remain in Syria until the Islamic State was completely defeated and Turkey guaranteed it would not strike Kurdish forces. Right. And real quickly, one last quick little item here on the fertilizer side. U.S. phosphate production gets a boost. The Mosaic Company today announced that it has acquired the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers 404 permit for its Ona phosphate mine in Hardy County, Florida. This was the final remaining permit for the project and secures 160.2 million tons of phosphate rock for future mining. Quote, this important project helps secure the continued operation of our Florida manufacturing facilities, said Mosaic President and CEO Jacques O'Rourke. Permitting efforts for this project started in 2011, Chip. Mining permits for the state of Florida were issued in 15. Local governments secured permits in July 2018, and now looks like we've got the go-ahead. We need more phosphate production in this country, and looks like we're going to get it.
Good.
Now back to you.
All right. Good stuff. Thank you, Davis. Hey, let's jump over and have a conversation with Kirk Hinz, meteorologist at BAMWX.com. Kirk, Happy New Year to you. How you doing?
Good, sir. How are you?
I'm doing real well, real well. Hey, were there any surprises out of Brazil over the weekend as far as rainfall goes?
So actually, models did pretty well. We saw a good 50 to 60% coverage of, I would say, 1 to 2 inches where they desperately needed it. Not every location received it, and nor do I think they got enough by any means, because next 2 to 4 weeks, we're going to be 5 degrees above normal, and we're going to see 25% the normal rainfall. So we're really getting into essentially our July is their January. So we're really getting into the hottest part of the month down there. And they're going to be running well below on precip.
25% of normal rainfall is what you guys are looking for. And then 5 degrees. When you say plus 5 degrees on temperatures, I mean,
correct.
Turn them into Fahrenheit temperatures. What are we talking about?
Yeah, we're talking 90 to 95. On average, I would say at least 90. So that, I mean, when you have that for, it's 2 to 4 weeks straight and you're running well below on precipitation, you need more moisture to keep up with that temperature.
Exactly. Exactly. Kirk, it's obviously a critical time for that soybean crop down there. That's what you're looking for over the next couple of weeks. Is there any, what should we be watching for that would signal a break in that hot and dry pattern?
Yeah. So just rains over verifying, essentially going a little bit. So they're focused right now in southern Brazil. If they start creeping up further north, that would be the risk of watching that things would be better. Right now we're focusing on being south.
Okay. Now, speaking of south, go south into Argentina, because it looked like there were some heavy rains.
Yeah, that area is very high in my concern. I would say the whole north central parts of Argentina, Uruguay, I mean, I think over the next 7 to 10 days, those people probably get 6 to 12 inches additionally. And we've been talking 30 inches in those regions over the past 45 days. So that is equally a problem area.
Yeah, unbelievable that you could have such a sharp line between too hot and too dry and way too much water. Kirk, keep us up to speed, buddy. Thanks, man.
I will. I appreciate it, guys.
All right. That is Kirk Hinz, meteorologist at BAMWX.com. All right, coming up next, we're going to have a conversation with Ann Deignan from J.P. Morgan. What's the economy, the ag economy, got in store for 2019? We're talking with Dane Bowers, herbicide technical product lead at Syngenta. You know, Dane, if we could just figure out when the weeds were going to turn resistant on us, that would really help us in controlling all the problems that we're dealing with out there. I understand that Syngenta has developed some kind of a model for predicting when weed resistance might develop. Share some of the details about that model with us.
Yes, Chip. This is really an exciting development. Our Syngenta scientists have developed a proprietary model, And what the model is really good at is comparing the ability of various herbicide programs to delay development of resistance in weed populations. This model is really quite complex, although the output is really simple. But the model itself takes into account a lot of parameters, things such as weed biology, planting date, application dates of the herbicides, and many other factors.
Yeah.
So go ahead, Chip.
Yeah, I was just going to say, when you talk about this model, how exactly does it work? I mean, what factors, what variables are you looking at?
So what we can do with this herbicide model is we can select two different herbicide programs. We can select the timing that we apply those herbicides. We can select the planting date of when we're going to plant the crop. And what this will do is it runs a simulation over a 20-year period of time, and it will tell us when resistance will develop with comparing herbicide program A to herbicide program B. And so it's we've verified that looking backward in time and comparing to some development of glyphosate resistance, and the model proves to be quite effective at this. So we are utilizing this now with customers to help them understand what is the best program for them to select. We can utilize this program in many different ways. What's the best timing to apply the herbicides, for example? So it's really giving us a lot of utility and helping us both in selecting new herbicides coming down the pike for growers, and as well as helping growers today to manage resistant weeds.
Yeah, when we talk about resistant weeds, I mean, the number one that comes to my mind is water hemp. I assume that we're targeting water hemp with a program like this.
That's exactly correct. The model, as it currently stands, is it's designed to be a water hemp model, although it's very applicable to looking at Palmer amaranth as well, since those two species are fairly similar. But we do have plans in the future. We really hope to expand this into some other weeds. So with some continued research, hopefully we'll have some additional weeds built into the program.
All right. That's a peek into the future right there of weed control. Thank you, Dane. That was Dane Bowers, herbicide technical product lead at Syngenta. Learn more about best practices for managing resistant weeds through their resistance fighter program from Syngenta.
Current price times 1,000 acres, carry the one.
These days, it's hard to make the math work for your soybean fields. The BASF LibertyLink system with Liberty Herbicide makes it easier. Start with a 2-plus bushel per acre yield advantage. Add in lower system input costs and more complete weed control, and you get an extra $33 or more profit potential per acre compared to Asgrow Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Grow smart with LibertyLink and BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Growers face enough worries today. SDS and nematodes shouldn't be among them. Alevo seed treatment from BASF is the only product that offers effective protection against both SDS and nematodes throughout the critical growing period. Growers get amazing early season protection for stronger profit potential at harvest. So worry about weather. Don't worry about SDS or nematodes with Alevo. To find out more about Alevo and how to protect your soybeans, talk to your seed dealer or your BASF rep. Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
We're live on the red carpet, waiting for the next generation Credenz soybean. There he is!
Oh, Ed, look! It's Credenz Liberty Link GT27!
I know, Edna! He's got elite genetics.
You gotta love his 4 bushel per acre yield advantage.
And he's both Liberty and glyphosate herbicide tolerant.
Definitely the year's hottest performer. Ask your Credenz retailer about the new Credenz Liberty Link GT27 soybeans.
Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
The mighty Prosaro, king of fungicides. Its fast action and long residual make it the keeper of grain quality and yield, the hammer of head and leaf diseases, the number one reducer of scab. When your goal is greater wheat quality and higher yield, use Prosaro fungicide, and the crown of higher profit will be yours. Learn more at prosaro.us. Always read and follow label instructions.
The best talkers in ag, including you. Join the conversation on AgriTalk. Call us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
And of course, if you would rather communicate with us via Twitter, just include hashtag AgriTalk in the message. That way I will be sure to see it throughout the show, throughout the conversation as we got things going. So, let's go straight to her. We've got Ann Deignan on the line. Ann is the managing director for J.P. Morgan. She's a longtime friend of mine. Ann, happy New Year to you. How you doing?
Happy New Year. We're doing good here in New York. So far, we haven't had any cold weather to speak of, but I think it's coming at us this week. So
yeah.
We'll see how we're doing it by the end of the week.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, yeah. Hey, Ann, the reason I've got a couple of people that have sent in questions that they want me to get to, and we're going to get to those, but I got to get your kind of your general feel for what you expect from the ag economy for 2019, because and from the general economy as well, because from my point of view right now, there's become kind of a popular economic outlook right now, that and that is that the global economy is going to slow down, and that the risk is that the global economy will be an anchor on the U.S. economy. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, you know, interestingly, one of the values of working at J.P. Morgan is we're a big place and we have a lot of employees, and I sit next to a lot of our economists and strategists on the fixed income side and the equity side. And actually, yes. I mean, this morning I was talking to our chief economist, and he said, look, the U.S. is not going to be exempt if the rest of the world slows down, right? And I think what's been happening in the stock market then is this growing fear that if the Fed continue to raise interest rates in the face of a global slowdown in the economy, that, you know, we get a self-fulfilling recession, that equity markets will continue to sell off, then consumers would lose confidence, then businesses stop investing, and then employment starts to slow. So I think there was a sigh of relief here in New York on Friday when Powell said that maybe they'll hold off, and they're not, you know, they're cognizant of the global slowdown and the impact that that could have on the U.S. economy. So, you know, we kind of push out perhaps the increase in interest rates and give the economy time to continue to expand into 2019. So, you know, I think there's a lot going on right now, Chip, to be quite honest.
Yeah, there certainly is. And the political uncertainty and the government shutdown, and I mean, that's not making it any easier to come up with some sort of a clear plan as to what might happen for the economy going forward, is it?
No, I mean, every day that the government is shut down, it's another day of uncertainty, or, you know, it gives us less visibility into what's going to happen a quarter from now or a week from now. You know, at some point, if people are not getting paid, they're going to stop spending, or they're going to spend less, and that's going to weigh on the economy.
Yeah. Yeah. So what about overall impact on the ag economy then? And we've obviously been tracking what's going on with revenues. 2019 doesn't look like there's going to be any spectacular recovery in revenues, does there?
No, and Chip, you know, to be quite honest, you and I have had many the argument about whatever it was, ethanol at one point, or whatever bone of contention we might have had amongst us. And one thing that I'm scratching my head over now, right now, is the price of soybeans. I mean, at the end of the day, exports are down 42% this marketing year. You know, the window of opportunity to export to China is closing quickly. The stock market and investors seem to be oblivious to all of this. And with the negotiations going on this week, you know, there's high expectations that maybe China will lift the tariff on soybeans. And, you know, I'm kind of sitting here in New York scratching my head going, like, who cares? The exports aren't coming back this marketing year, in our view, at least not the 42%. And so I'm much more cautious than a lot of people on particularly the equipment guys like John Deere and AGCO and CNH Industrial, because, you know, to me, soybeans have significantly more downside risk than upside risk, in my view. And I'd love to hear your opinion and whether you think I'm right or wrong.
You know, it is, one of the guests on the afternoon hour last week, and I'm not coming up with who it was right now. And maybe it was even the week before. I don't know. But he was talking about if we confirm that we've got a good crop. It doesn't have to be a great crop out of Brazil, just a good crop. And here we are running up against some of these weather issues right now in Brazil. And if you're looking for the latest reason why soybean prices are holding up, it would be that turn in the weather that we've had down in Brazil. But what if we do end up with, just call it, go to the lowest estimate that's out there on the market right now, Ann. That's 116 million metric tons from FC Stone. That's still too many beans that we're putting onto the supply side of the global balance sheet. And eventually, the U.S. and Brazil are going to be looking to correct an oversupplied situation at the same time. To me, that feels like a race to the bottom, man.
I agree with you. And then I think the other issue that people are forgetting is that Argentina's crop will be significantly better than last year's. And what if they choose to export the beans rather than crush them? So, you know, sense I get is that things are going to take a step down before they take a step back up. And, you know, even if we get some good news out of China this week.
Yeah. Yeah, even if we do. Okay, you mentioned that you're not real rosy on the outlook for the equipment manufacturers right now. But I got to ask you, Ann, isn't the machinery market ripe for a disruptor to come in here? I mean, the major manufacturers keep running out more complicated, more sophisticated, and, of course, more expensive equipment. And based on the conversations that I'm having with farmers right now, Ann, that is not what they want. All they want is cheap horsepower.
You know, that's a great point. And, you know, our perspective is, look, yes, I would agree. You've got lack of competition. And when you've got so few suppliers of particularly large, high horsepower equipment, then you give the manufacturer pricing power. And Wall Street loves pricing power. So, you know, these companies have been able to raise prices year in, year out. And even with higher steel prices, they've been able to deliver record profits to the bottom. And I think part of what's happened, Chip, and the way the manufacturers have overcome some of this is they've moved a significant number of their sales to leasing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's the good old consumer methodology where, you know, I only want to know what my monthly payment is. And if I can afford to pay that, then I'll keep trading in my equipment and take a new piece of shiny equipment. Thank you. And the other thing the equipment guys have done a good job of is convincing farmers that if they don't trade, then their engines or their drivetrains may break down and then they'll be faced with a $50,000 bill that they can't afford. So I do think it's interesting that Deere posted as significant upside to their earnings last year, in part because warranty expenses were down, and yet they're telling farmers to trade because their equipment might break down.
Yeah, that warranty. We're going to be talking with Greg Peterson in the next segment. I know you know Greg really well, and it seems like the warranty issue on the used equipment comes up all the time. And if there's any kind of warranty still associated with a piece of equipment, it just makes it that much more valuable out there on the auction block, no question about it. All right, I want to do this real quick. Ethanol, what are your thoughts? What if we could get EPA to stop issuing those stupid waivers on the RFS, Ann?
Well, you know, I was thinking about you last week because we were doing some work on ethanol, and the fact that the RIN prices are so low.
Yeah.
It is encouraging the large petroleum companies to buy RINs rather than blend ethanol.
Yep.
And
clearly.
So, you know, we do see that as a downside risk for the corn balance sheet going forward, because if those RINs stay at reasonable prices, then domestic demand for ethanol is likely to be lower, even if the EPA allows E15 year-round. We never thought that would be a huge positive impact. And then you have exports, which have been better than we might have expected for the last couple of years. There is some talk out there that maybe China, as you know, a little token, would offer to import more ethanol from the U.S. As you know, just a token offering rather than lift the tariff on soybeans. You know, so that could help on the export side, but as things stand now, we also think that there's more downside risk to upside risk on for ethanol and ethanol domestic consumption.
Gotcha. Well, you know what? I'll drop you a note. I've got a couple of thoughts on it. And I think you're probably right. Right now, there is more downside risk on it than what there is upside potential. And it's simply because we've got plenty of ethanol out there right now. And we need to do this more often, can we?
Absolutely. Just let me know.
All right. Sounds good. That is Ann Dygan, J.P. Morgan. We've got Machinery Pete coming up next.
Current price times 1,000 acres, carry the one.
These days, it's hard to make the math work for your soybean fields. The BASF Liberty Link system with Liberty Herbicide makes it easier. Start with a 2-plus bushel per acre yield advantage. Add in lower system input costs and more complete weed control, and you get an extra $33 or more profit potential per acre compared to Asgrow Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Grow smart with Liberty Link and BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Yeah, joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beach, a little bit of strength going in the soy complex here today.
A little bit, Chip. You know, we were trading about a nickel higher or so. We backed off. It's about 3 cents higher right now. You know, some hopes that there's going to be some progress on the U.S. and China trade talks that got underway earlier today in Beijing. And it sounds like the first day went well. But, you know, no real deal is expected. Maybe just a deal to continue talks, which is anticipated later this month. The flip side is that, you know, the export inspections weren't anything great this morning. And as a result, we backed off those highs a little bit from where we were at.
Gotcha. You know, this wheat trade, it seems like it's a kind of a fickle market right now. If that market's going to go to the upside, it almost needs news out of Russia on a daily basis.
Yeah, it does. We need demand news, and unfortunately, the weekly export inspections number were just very poor, disappointing there. And as a result, you know, the market's under pressure, and it was trading under pressure before that.
Yeah.
So it isn't like that's put new pressure on the market. But like I said, we need positive demand news, and we just aren't getting it on a consistent enough basis at this point.
Got some solid gains going in the cattle complex.
Well, they started out weaker, and we saw cash cattle prices late last Friday back down just a little bit, and yet we've turned it around. So I think some corrective buying because that market got beat up quite heavily there. And we were seeing the February contract trading below the cash, so that was somewhat of a concern, and they're fixing that this morning.
Yeah, no question about it. We've got some light to moderate pressure going on in the lean hog market today. All right, Brian. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
Yep,
that is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady, Markets Now.
Our name says it all. AgriTalk. What more do you need to know?
Yeah, what more do you need to know? There's a lot more that we need to know.
A whole bunch more. A whole bunch
more.
Much. Yeah, yeah. 855-4-TALK-AG would help if you'd call us.
Yeah.
Help us. Tell us.
Let us know what you're thinking.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be fine. That would be fun. As a matter of fact,
well,
and now's the
be.
Time to do it because we got Machine Repeat coming on.
Yep.
And
yep.
I know that everybody out there has got a question about a piece of equipment that they've got, wondering what it's worth, wondering what some of the trends are that are out there in the used machinery market as well.
And I got to tell you, that was a very interesting point because I did that too. I purchased a new vehicle a few years ago.
Yeah.
I just wanted to keep it simple. I just wanted it to work.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted the most bang for my buck. And when you talk about cheap horsepower, you know, auto steer would be wonderful. It would be great if I could watch TV while I'm driving my combine. It would be great to have this and that and this and that gadget. But when it comes down to it, boy, it's just about crunch time, isn't it, Chip?
Yeah. 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 That's exactly right. And ladies and gentlemen, he's not kidding. I mean, there's no power windows in the Jeepy.
No, no. There's no power windows, no power locks. I don't want anything to break. I'm going to drive this Jeep until it explodes, and I'm hoping that's like, you know, 2029 or something like that.
Exactly. Exactly. Greg Peterson, how are you, man? Happy New Year.
Yeah, same to you, Chip.
Good.
Same to you.
Yeah. Hey, Greg, I got to – we just had a conversation with Ann Dignan. I know that you know Ann well.
Yeah, you bet.
And we were talking a little bit about you know, maybe this market is – the machinery market is a market that on the new side could be prime or ripe for a disruptor to come into this market. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I would agree with that, Chip. I think, you know, when we don't have our head on a swivel, that's a recipe for getting blindsided.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the market, as the dollars have got bigger to buy a new planter, a new combine, a new tractor, a new grain cart, a new everything.
Yeah.
Certainly we appreciate the quality of the existing manufacturers, what they're doing, but the one place I think that's going to become more of an issue as the dealers continue to contract by design from the manufacturers is it's going to put some pressure on the short line manufacturers, whether they make planters or, you know, drills, mowers, whatever. They're going to have fewer outlets to work through dealers. So, you know, I think there's going to be room for companies to come in and sort of be super short liners throughout the region, and whether that's, you know, they carry certain grain carts and augers and planters. But beyond that, in terms of manufacturing, hey, if you can deliver something that gets the job done,
yeah,
as the costs of new keep going up, up, up,
yeah,
just like you guys were talking about, hey, bottom line, get the job done.
Yeah.
And if, you know, farm country is, they watch the bottom line, particularly when times are tough. And that would be an interesting time for somebody to hop in and say, hey, we have a new tractor, we have a new combine, and guess what? It costs X percent less. Right. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. And in the meantime, we need to keep track of what's going on in this used machinery market, because and this is a conversation that I've had with Ann, and I know that you've had it many, many, mm-hmm. many times, but that used machinery market really drives the new market out there as well, has a big impact on it. So, but let's start off the, because this is such a busy time of the year on the auctions, let's go straight to it. Pete's Pick of the Week.
Machinery Pete's Pick of the Week is brought to you by MachineFinder.com. Where can you find the most comprehensive inventory of John Deere certified pre-owned tractors, combines, and sprayers? MachineFinder.com. Sometimes the best new addition to your fleet isn't new.
All right, Greg, what do you got today, bud?
Well, we're going to do something different, Chip. We do have a Pete's Pick of the Week on the auction front, but I'm going to throw in a little surprise at the end for you. But
okay.
Let's start on the auction side. So, December 28th. Folks around the country, they've seen the sale bills and for years. They know St. Ann, Illinois, the big consignment sale there, a few of them throughout the year, and, of course, the big year-end sale. Again, it was December 28th, Northeast Illinois. And on the sale was a 1976 International 966. Now, this was a really rare one, Chip. It was a black stripe front wheel assist with a canopy. Now, I don't know.
Seriously?
I don't know, one, how many hours it had, and I don't know. It looked like it had been restored, but I couldn't verify that. But I just know what it sold for, $33,000.
Wow.
Now, I mean, I knew that was a record price when I saw it on the 28th. I was tracking it, and I hopped in our machinery Pete site, and it's like, holy cow. Last 20 years, the previous high on the International 966 was $13,250.
Wow.
So, more proof here, when you get these really rare, you know, model combinations, and especially these front wheel assists from the 70s, I don't know if this was a factory. I don't know.
I don't.
But it's $33,000.
I don't think I knew that there was a front wheel assist 966.
Well, like I said, I don't know if it was a factory model or if it was, you know, someone that souped it up. We did get a lot of outreach after that when we posted on social media. One fellow sent me a note, and he's going to have, I think, two or three on the Mecum Spring Auction in Davenport, Iowa. front wheel assist internationals, I think a 1066, a 1466. And these things are really obviously ringing the bell right now.
Yeah.
Is this now?
Okay,
is
now that's the first part of my Pete's pick of the week.
Yeah.
Jeff, the other one, we just want to let people know now, if you got something for sale by owner yourself, you're looking to sell a piece or two, you can list it in machinerypete.com now and get the benefit of all the eyeballs from the TV show and everything and people on Google looking. So anyway, we've got a tractor in there I want to highlight. It's from Kansas. It's from Plains, Kansas. Guy's name is Douglas Fox. And I tell you what, he has a sharp tractor chip, a 1991 John Deere 4955 two-wheel drive.
Yep.
Which you don't see many two-wheels. 6,506 hours, second owner. And what I love about it, Douglas really provided a good history, verbal history on it.
Yep.
Second owner, bought it with 1,800 hours, used it on his planter and a sprayer until 2013. Then he used it on his grain cart mower and a track closer ever since. And he repainted it, new interior in 2006, got the Outback guidance, serviced every 100 hours, so really detail. Yeah. And this thing looks like new. And he's asking $47K on it. I threw it on Facebook and Twitter this morning. You can find it there, folks. Or just go to machinerypete.com and search 4955. You'll see it. It's a beauty.
It's cool. It's cool. No question about it. Davis, were you going to jump in there, bud?
Well, I'm just curious. I mean, you're going back to the model from the 70s, and you mentioned maybe it was a factory model, maybe it was a restore. For it to go, you know, $20,000 over what you usually see for an outfit like that, maybe this is a silly question, but is that going to see time in the field, or is that somebody saying, hey, I just want to have this, I want to showcase this, maybe drive it around in parades or things like this? Is it going to be put to work, do you reckon?
Well, that's a great question, Davis. I mean, you would certainly think when it's, you know, almost triple the previous price, you'd say, oh, wow, that has to be just a collector item, right? Stay in the shed, go to the parades, go to the shows.
Yeah. Right.
But I would say my experience over the years would be it's maybe 80% of the time that's the case. But it's shocking how often, maybe up, you know, 20-25% of the time, people buy a tractor like that, and they're like, well, I'm going to kind of use that, you know, whatever. I'll bale some hay, I'll do this or that.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, it's to each his own, and, you know, it's really interesting. But I'm seeing these rare tractors from the 70s into the early 80s really attracting more collector interest. We've talked about Chip, those 7488s, internationals, they only made 16 of them. Two of them sold on it, whatever it was, November 10th, 100,000 and 115K. So if it's rare from the 70s or 80s, it is just Katie bar the door right now.
It is a hot commodity right now, no doubt about it. No doubt. Hey, we've only got a couple of minutes left here, Greg, but at the end of 2018, we were getting the feeling that there was kind of some momentum going to the upside on the used equipment values. We still feeling that?
Yeah, definitely, Chip. Two sales in particular right at the end of the year proved the point. And historically, right after Christmas, before New Year's, sometimes you get a little back off. But not this year. In fact, on our own sale, our Machine Repeat year-end online unreserved dealer auction, which ended December 27th, we saw a record price on a 2016 John Deere 6155R tractor, 531 hours with a loader, went for $123,501. That came out of central Minnesota. That was $8,500 over the previous high. Wow. And the previous high was 150 hours less. So, again, strong price there.
Yeah.
Then there was a sale the next day in Kansas, Winchester, Kansas, the 28th. A Younger auction company, Mark Younger, had the sale. Incredible line of equipment. Highest price of the year on a John Deere 8370R, 2017 model, 194 hours. Warranty, which, of course, is huge, out to May of 20. That brought $258. Highest price of the year on a John Deere S670 combine. It was a 15 model, 767 engine hours, went 237.5. A planter sold strong, a 15 John Deere DB60, 36 row, 20 inch, 173.5. And a record price on a Kinze 1100 grain cart on tracks for 87,000. So late model stuff, super nice, premium price, continuing the trend. If it's in good condition, the market for used is strong right now.
Yeah. Yeah, no question about it. No question. Well, we'll get more into that next week when we have a conversation. All right, Greg, because this is something that that used machinery market, it's kind of an undercurrent of everything else that is going on in the ag economy. So I want to stay really focused on it. All right?
You got it. You got it.
All right, buddy. All right. That is Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete, right here on AgriTalk. Okay, when we come back, Davis and I are going to introduce a new segment to you. I think you guys are going to enjoy it. It's powered by Pro Farmer.
Current price times 1,000 acres, carry the one.
These days, it's hard to make the math work for your soybean fields. The BASF Liberty Link system with Liberty Herbicide makes it easier. Start with a 2-plus bushel per acre yield advantage. Add in lower system input costs and more complete weed control, and you get an extra $33 or more profit potential per acre compared to Asgro Roundup Ready 2 Extend soybeans. Grow smart with Liberty Link and BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Oh, hey, bro. I'm an off-brand filter, so I am under-engineered and made from cheaper components. So dust and contaminants, they're your problem, bro.
John Deere filters. Don't risk it with anything less. Get 10% off your John Deere filter packs at your John Deere dealer or at johndeerestore.com. Offer ends February 28, 2019 on filter packs for subcompact and compact utility tractors. Some restrictions apply. See participating dealers or johndeerestore.com for details. johndeerestore.com available in U.S. only.
And joining us is Jason Derschmidt from Fort Dodge, Iowa. Jason, I got to know, did you notice any difference in plant health with the Poncho Votivo 2.0 this year?
We did. Late season, we're still seeing a healthy plant standing good. It's got some green to it yet, and we're pretty late in the season now at this point. So, yeah, we've definitely seen better plant health. Everything stood good through the summer. We had a pretty wet year and quite a few decent wind events, 50-60 mile an hour winds, and we didn't see any lodging or any tipping at the roots or anything. So, yeah, definitely very good plant health.
Boy, and with the growing season that you've had up there in north central Iowa, Jason, that's saying a lot, no question about it. Okay. You've still got some crop out in the field, but you've started to bring that corn crop in. Are you seeing any yield differences with Poncho Votivo 2.0?
We did. We've seen about 5 to 10 bushel over anything else we've been in. So, and we're running 1250 on everything else. So I'd say we're picking up another probably 5 bushel at least on the 2.0.
Yeah, so you got plans to use more PV 2.0 for next year?
I do. I plan to use it on everything.
And what is the big reason? What does PV 2.0, what does it really give you? Is it the protection against the nematodes?
It is. It's that and early season plant health and a better uptake of nutrients. I mean, it's just an all-around healthier-looking plant.
Yeah, and again, if those yield differences, that's putting that we're talking about some real money and a great return on your investment.
Yeah, and not just the yield, the plant health late in the season, because we've had a lot of corn lodge this year. I mean, a lot of stuff that didn't have the root structure that it needed to withstand the wet weather and the wind. And the 2.0 definitely stood and had better plant health than anything else we've had.
That's great to hear, Jason. Thank you so much. That's Jason Derschmidt from Fort Dodge, Iowa.
You're listening to the new AgriTalk with Chip Flory and me, the handsome newsman, Davis Michelson.
It's good to hear that you're handsome again.
Well, you know, don't call it a comeback, but I did need a haircut pretty bad there for
a
while. We got her taken care of on Friday. You betcha.
Well, at Looking Blossom sharp. Hollow Farm was a little concerned that maybe we were no longer the handsome newsman. That's all I'm saying.
Well, and you know, I don't want to be known as just a fantastically handsome guy. I mean, there's a brain between these ears, Chip.
You're not just another pretty face made for radio.
Well, maybe I am. I'm not sure. The jury's out. I'll give you the pretty part, though.
All right. Hey, new segment. I'm kind of excited about this. And
this is cool.
It's not like it's going to be, you know, really kind of scheduled. It's not going to happen in the fourth segment on Mondays every week. Mm-hmm. It's going to happen when we think that it's time for it to happen because there's something important to be discussed. And we're calling it Powered by ProFarmer. Yep. So ProFarmer has a full slate of daily services that go rolling out there on email.
Go ahead. One of the things I was working on first, and I do it every single Monday morning, it's called the Monday Morning Wake-Up Call.
Right.
And that's a service that we provide. Brian Grady, our editor here, goes over the just a real quick hit. Where the market's open, what he sees as some of the news stories that will be impacting the markets as the week goes on. And then you can get it on your cell phone.
Right.
I take it, package it up, and send it on the computer machine, and it makes your pocket vibrate if you want it to, and you can pick up a real quick hit that way. That's pretty nifty as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely it is. But first thing today is the first thing that ProFarmer puts out every day.
That's right.
And it's some of the best, most complete perspective that you can get, not only at that time of the morning, but any time of the day. It's really impressive. Brian works on it. Megan Vick works on it. Jim Wiesmeyer works on it.
There's, Jeff Wilson. Jeff Wilson is in on it a little bit.
Jeff Wilson. Yep, that's right. I mean, there's a lot of effort that goes into this early morning report. It's out there at about 6:30 in the morning, and every now and then I want to take a look at not just first thing today, but maybe ahead of the open, maybe the snapshot, maybe the evening report from the previous day, and kind of highlight some of the issues that ProFarmer is talking about. So, real quick, Davis, just take us through FTT this morning. What were the headlines?
It usually starts out with just a quick little hit on the markets, where this morning we have quiet trade to start the week. Then we move on. U.S.-China negotiators begin 2 days of talks in Beijing. And if I can just pull out one little nugget from that, Bloomberg News reports Chinese Vice Premier Liu He unexpectedly attended what was meant to be a discussion between lower-ranking officials. So we got some bigwigs jumping in there, and we highlighted it here.
Absolutely. And, you know, we talked about it a little bit with Ann earlier. These talks are technical in nature. You know, how are we going to continue forward with talks later? But this is where you really make progress. Okay, what else?
Well, partial government shutdown continues as the White House offers concessions. The White House formally asked lawmakers Sunday to provide an additional $7 billion beyond what Senate appropriators proposed in their bipartisan Homeland Security spending bill, with more than half of that earmarked for a steel barrier. Here we go again with the steel barrier thing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And it's after that, confusing. Yeah, we move on, and this is key as well. House to pass individual agency spending bills.
That's interesting. Piecemeal things together and try to get the government up and running again. That's what it looks like to me. What else?
Key to understanding impacts of new Democratic-controlled House. Let me just bring this to light here. The Democrat-controlled House can stop things proposed by Trump and the GOP-controlled Senate, but their own initiatives will not go anywhere without GOP and Trump approval.
Right.
So you kind of have to have both hands washing the other in order to get anything done here.
Go ahead. Read that whole item right there, David, I think it's really interesting.
Yep, and that is why most of what House Democrats proposed will be political in nature, designed to get GOP lawmakers to vote against the Democratic goals ahead of the 2020 elections. Compromise is possible on some topics, including healthcare, trade deals, that includes the USMCA and etc., and perhaps infrastructure reform. Yeah. Meanwhile, House Democrats will aggressively pursue oversight of the Trump administration and key issues like implementation of the 2018 Farm Bill and administration of the renewable fuels standard program.
You know, I hope that they really do focus on a couple of those things. That implementation of the 2018 Farm Bill, obviously that's going to be high on our priority list. But administration of the renewable fuel standard program as well. We talked about it with Ann. Yeah. The value of those RINs is now low enough that it just makes more sense, economic sense, for the refiners to go out and buy the RINs, turn those RINs in that they have purchased to satisfy their blending requirements. So you ask yourself, how can they do that? Well, there's a time table on RINs that they're good for a certain period of time. I believe it's 18 months. So, but because you've got 18 months worth of RINs available to you to satisfy the blending requirements of 12 months, there should always be a surplus of RINs out there on the marketplace. Well, the way things stand right now, it's amazing to me that we've got ethanol prices as cheap as they are, but we've taken so much value out of those RINs because of the waivers that were issued a year ago. We've taken so much value out of the RINs that it still makes more sense to buy the RINs and turn those in to satisfy your blending requirements than it does to actually do the blending. That's very concerning to me. And then infrastructure issue there, we're going to talk with Ken Erickson from Informa about that tomorrow, because I think maybe the infrastructure thing is something that the Democrats are going to pursue, with the idea that if they can get a deal done on infrastructure, then later when we get into some more contentious issues, the Democrats can say, well, they agreed with us on infrastructure on this.
Right.
I don't know why we can't get any more agreements going forward.
Right.
Well, infrastructure issues been around forever, man.
Yep.
It's been around forever.
Yep, and we also hit the livestock markets real quick at the end of that report as well for you livestock guys out there.
Absolutely. All right. Hey, thanks, Davis. Thanks for listening today, everybody. Thanks to Kirk Hinds and Dagnan, Greg Peterson for joining us today. Come back this afternoon for another hour of AgriTalk. We've got Clark Neighbors from BIS Commodities.
It's time to get dirt rich with new Poncho Votivo 2.0 corn seed treatment. The increase in microbial activity in the soil helps get more nutrients to the plant, and you get an average 3.8 bushel per acre yield increase over the original Poncho Votivo, all with the trusted insect and nematode protection you're used to. So be dirt rich, because that's smart. Ask your seed dealer for the new Poncho Votivo 2.0 today. Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Current price times 1,000 acres, carry the one.
These days, it's hard to make the math work for your soybean fields. The BASF Liberty Link system with Liberty Herbicide makes it easier. Start with a 2-plus bushel per acre yield advantage. Add in lower system input costs and more complete weed control, and you get an extra $33 or more profit potential per acre compared to Asgro Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Grow smart with Liberty Link and BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Thanks to the Resistance Fighter Program from Syngenta for sponsoring this AgriTalk podcast. Visit resistancefighter.com and talk to your retailer or Syngenta representative about how to best manage resistant weeds.